touch upon two of them and then emphasize the third one, which is the coming holiday. Which one is that? The major Jewish holiday, which is the
Pesach.
Pesach. What month is Pesach?
Nisan.
Pesach or Passover is the month of Nisan. How many months are there in this Jewish year, Lars?
13.
This year there are 13. That's correct. Because it's a Jewish leap year, 5,755. And we are now deep in what month? We're concluding in the next 10 days.
Adar 2,
right? That's why we celebrated Purim last week. And the next month will be Nisan, the month of miracles. The word Nes in Hebrew means a miracle. And therefore, Nisan is the name of a month in which miracles occur. What miracle specifically? What miracle? Sorry? That's the exodus from Egypt and all of the accompanying miracles prior to the exodus, which you should read very carefully in the book of Exodus, Shemot, the second book of the five books of Moses, the first portions, until about chapter 12 or so, will give you the story of the Jews in Egypt, the oppression, enslavement, persecution, the 10 plagues struck down the Egyptians prior to that exodus.
Watch the movie.
You can watch the movie if you like, Exodus, right? See how Cecil B. DeMille treated it in comparison of what it says in the Torah. That you can see, you can read about, and you should, not you can, but you should. Make it your business on the programs that I gave you. Make it your business to read parts of the Torah regularly. Now, last year, I used to review for you the portion of the week, which I'm not doing, but I'm trying to catch in more of the halachic and the historical background and the information that you need about basic Jewish life and basic Judaism. Okay? But Passover, Pesach, in Hebrew it's called Pesach. Or P-S-A-H, some spell it that way, Pesach, modern Hebrew, based upon the spelling in the Encyclopedia Judaica. The Ches sound, the Hebrew is written as an H in English, with a little dot on it. It has a name, I think, a dot, which gives it a Ch sound, Pesach. But most often you'll find it's called Passover, because the word Pesach means Passover. At least that's one of the two definitions of the word Pesach. Pesach. Pasach. Pasach. Hashem. Pasach. Abatei b'nei Yisrael b'Mitzrayim b'nei Yisrael b'Mitzrayim b'Batei b'nei Yisrael. It says he passed over the homes of the Jews, God did, when he was striking down the firstborn of the Egyptians, which was the 10th plague. That happened on that night of Pesach, the first night of the holiday, and the exact date is the 15th day of the month of Nisan, which is the first day of the Jewish holiday of Pesach Passover. Actually, there's another definition of the word Pesach or Pesach, and it is compassion. God has mercy. The two explanations of the word Pesach. The most popular one is Passover. Passover. Okay. And the Pesach holiday begins many things in addition to a series of three pilgrim holidays. There are three pilgrim holidays in Hebrew called Shalosh Regalim. Three, the word regal in Hebrew means a holiday or a foot. Regalim, a holiday, or it could be feet. Because the law was that Jews should travel from wherever they were in the land of Israel, outside the land of Israel, to spend those three holidays in particular in Jerusalem. Three holidays are Passover, and the next holiday, which will follow exactly seven weeks later, Shavuot. Shavuot is a week, don't you know? 7 weeks later, exactly. The day after the holiday of Pesach. And the third one is in the fall, which is called Sukkot. Sukkot. We're not going to concentrate, as I said, too much on the other two, on Shavuot and Sukkot tonight, because the emphasis on what we're going to get into is on Pesach, except to say that each holiday celebrates a different kind of miracle.
of the Bible of the Jewish people. For instance, what does Passover celebrate? Pesach?
Exodus, freedom, liberty. In the first of the Ten Commandments, God identifies himself with the words, I am the Lord thy God who has taken you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of bondage. God is the God of liberty and freedom. Pesach means freedom of a people, of a nation, taken out from another nation. That's exactly what the Torah says in the book of Deuteronomy. That never before did it happen that God came to take Goy Mikerev Goy, a nation from inside another nation. Now rabbis are very graphic about it, they're dramatic. They said the removal of Jews, taking Jews out of Egypt, was like taking a baby out of its mother's womb. A baby in its mother's womb is tied in with all kinds of membranes. An umbilical cord and other things, the placenta, and the baby is held fast there, secure and protected in its mother's womb, such extraordinary circumstances. And the Jewish people were also in Egypt, enmeshed in Egypt. They were part of the society, like American Jews are today part of America. Americanism and the modern world in which we live. And there was a slave world, and God came along and appointed a leader whose name was Moses, Moshe, accompanied by his brother whose name was Aaron, and they came to Pharaoh and said, let my people go. And he refused. For a whole year he refused. A whole year slaves struck Egypt. How many were there?
Ten.
The last one was the most devastating, which was the killing of the firstborn children, boys, of the Egyptian families, which took place, as I said, on that night of the 15th of Nisan, and according to Jewish law, the night begins the day. The sunset, the next day begins, so it happened at midnight, and then Pharaoh came and said, go, get out of here, because is destroying my entire land.
Wasn't Pharaoh a firstborn?
Pharaoh himself was a firstborn, according to the rabbis, and he survived so he should be able to see the devastation. And there are two opinions whether he survived the splitting of the Red Sea. One opinion is that he survived even that. 7 days later, he came to the Red Sea, surrounded on one side by the Egyptian army, chasing them, the other side by the raging waters. Sea of Reeds, or Red Sea, in popular words, and God said, let the people travel through the sea, and the sea split, the sea will be the mill shoulder, didn't he? Without the sea will be the mill, we wouldn't believe it. It reminds me of the kid who came home, and the father said, what are you learning in Hebrew school? He says, I'm learning about the people of the Red Sea. I said, yeah, tell me what happened there. He said, well, they came to the Red Sea. The Egyptian army was in front. One side, there was a sea in front of them. Moses said, we've got to get across to the other side. From Egypt into the Sinai. How are we going to do it? So he called on the engineers, and they built pontoon bridges. And all the Jewish people passed over those temporary bridges that were made by the engineers. And when all of the bridges, all the people had passed over, they had explosives in all of the pontoon bridges, and they detonated them, and the Egyptians were on the bridges too, and they were detonated together with the pontoons, and they sank down into the sea. The father said, What? You learned this in Hebrew school? Are you kidding? This is what they taught you? So he said, Dad, if I were to tell you what they taught me about the sea splitting open and the people going through on a dry land, you wouldn't believe it anyhow. So I'm telling it to you in such a way, you should believe it. What did Cecil B. DeMille do? It's curled up, right? Our rabbis were more dramatic than that. They said that when the sea split open, it didn't split into two parts. 12 rows, but there were 12 tribes. Each tribe had its own path.
And it covered them,
that's right. And the kids were crying because the wall of the sea was standing up like frozen. Kafut, almost the lev yam, the frozen water, you see. The kids were crying, and so the mothers wanted to pacify them. When babies cry, what do you do?
Give him a pacifier.
He thinks he's hitting him up against the wall.
You feed it.
You don't want to do that. What do you do?
You feed it.
You feed it. Well, any kid's not hungry, but he's crying anyway.
Give him a pacifier.
I didn't say she. I said, well, girls don't cry.
Give him a little wine.
No?
Give him a little wine. No.
Give him a little wine. Or a pacifier. A pacifier? Mothers, where are you? A pacifier. Let's suck. Guess what the Jews did for pacifiers. Those Jewish mothers and sisters. They bent down on the sea, on the floor of the sea. There were seaweed, but it was still seaweed. So they picked up seaweed and had salt water on it. Gave it to the little children to suck on. This was the pacifier. What do we do the night of Pesach and say them to remind ourselves about that salt water?
The thing is that it hurts.
One of the first acts that we perform is to take a vegetable
and dip it in salt water.
Dip it into. We'll get salt water. It may be as a reminder of that ancient experience of Jewish people. It could very well be, okay? Now, we'll get back to that. Shavuot celebrated, you said, 7 weeks later. What does that remind us of?
The giving of the Torah. So
the time when the Jewish people became a holy nation by receiving the Torah. The giving and the receiving of the Torah granted by God to the Jewish people, through whom?
Moses.
Who represent Moshe, who went up to Mount Sinai and received the Torah. He was up there for 40 days and 40 nights. Somebody said to me just yesterday, my chiropractor said, you really believe that a human being can be on a mountain 40 days and 40 nights and not eat, and not drink? That's the Torah. If you eat anything, if you drink anything, how could a person survive 40 days and 40 nights? So how in 40 days you can learn such a vast Torah? What do you think I answered my chiropractor?
Yeah,
the former yeshiva one.
Yeah, I believe it.
That's the first thing, I believe it. Secondly, if God was the teacher, then the student can learn a whole lot. Believe me, God wants him to learn, he's going to learn. And if God wants to keep him alive, he's going to keep him alive too. He puts him in suspended animation, like a Star Trek.
Superman.
Don't watch it, huh? I thought
Star
I had one of my... My partner's here, so I do. I love it.
Yeah. I told you.
Oh,
come on, it's a woman captain.
Maybe that's why I don't like it.
It's what?
It's a woman captain.
It's enough I have one boss at home. Didn't I tell you I'm amazed over this?
Yep.
That was the time that we became a nation by receiving the Torah. The fundamental principle in that, I'll repeat to you 100 times, is very important if you're going to become an Orthodox, observant, religious Jew. Whether you're a Jew at birth, from birth, or a Jew through conversion, there is no such thing, as I've said a million times today, in my humble opinion, as conversion to Judaism, period. There's only conversion to Orthodox, observant, religious, Jewish life, or the conversion to the spot. It's nothing more than a game. It's nothing more than a falsification, an intention, and a very dangerous one, because it means converting the soul of a non-Jew, Christian, Muslim, whatever that person is, into a Jewish soul, and the soul belongs to God. So God says, the Jewish God says, yes, conversion is the proof. One of the mitzvot in our Torah, definitely, if it's done correctly. And by done correctly, I'm not talking about the rabbi. I'm talking about the convert, accepting upon himself or herself a total Jewish commitment. Total Jewish commitment, including it, that the Torah that we have today is divine. It is given by God to Moses. Moshe transfers to the Jewish people. Still, he was called Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu. It was very gay. When we speak about Moses from an intellectual Jewish point of view, we call him Moshe Rabbeinu, our teacher. Fundamental principle. There are movements in Jewish life that do not accept what I say. You say that the Torah is not divine. Torah was man-made. And Moses was a brilliant person. That is not acceptable from an Orthodox observant point of view. Therefore, I'm emphasizing that Shavuot represents that day when his people became the people of God. He will call them Lechet Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, the kingdom of priests, and the holy nation to the Torah. Sukkot in the fall, after Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, celebrates also Thanksgiving. Sukkot basically is a time of Thanksgiving. It's not for nothing that the American has a holiday called Thanksgiving in October sometime, because the pilgrims in this country knew the Bible readers, the Bible, religious Bible people, and they knew that Sukkot was a holiday of Thanksgiving in the fall after the harvest, the end of the harvest, until Sukkot celebrates that end of the summer season. Thanksgiving to God. Sukkot also represents the survival of the Jews, particularly in the 40 years between the time of liberation, of Exodus from Egypt, the time that they entered the promised land, the land of Canaan, the land of Israel, as we call it today. Those 40 years in the wilderness, led by Moshe, the protection of the Jews was the divine one, and they were protected by Sukkot. Sukkot. Sukkah is the singular, Sukkot. The plural, Sukkah means a booth. A booth, a hut, surrounding the person on six sides. Top, bottom, four sides, it's a Sukkah. Because it means a plural. The rabbis went further and said that the Jews were surrounded by heavenly clouds of protection for those 40 years. And a made kapot. About the glory sent by God on all six sides, where they're protected from the heat of the sun in the wilderness in the desert, during those 40 years, from the heat of the sand and from insects and the sand, and surrounded on all four sides against their enemies. And so we celebrate the holiday of Sukkot. So that's Shavuot and Sukkot. Let's get back. I have several things. Gesundheit. Atita. Gesundheit is the German Yiddish for may you live and be well, so to speak. Right? Asita is the Aramaic way of saying you may you live. Why do we say that if somebody sneezes?
You forgot the dead, aren't
you? Ricky is right.
It's true.
Talmud tells us that the method of death in the olden days, up to the time of Abraham, was that a person lived as many years as he or she was supposed to. And then when the time came for that person to leave this world, he or she would sneeze, and the soul, which is described in the Bible, in the Torah, as having been blown into the nostrils of Adam, says when God created Adam, Vayipach v'yatov nishmat ruach chayim, he blew into his nostrils a soul of living, of life. So the soul entered the human being through his nostrils, and when he sneezed, or he or she sneezed, soul would exit. And that would be the end of the life of that person. So today we have a habit of saying if one sneezes, zum gesund, you should sneeze and be healthy. You shouldn't, God forbid, pass away by sneezing. And Asita is the Aramaic for that. I think the Arabs have also. You know the Arabic? It's also good. The Germans have it. What is it called? Now, I have here in my hand a pamphlet that's called The Passover Guide. My problem is I don't have enough of them. Anybody here who can volunteer has a Xerox machine and prepare next week sometime? Okay. The only thing that may have to be changed in this one is the dates. And so we can write in the new dates if you so desire. The first day of Pesach will be Friday night. Friday night, April 14th. That's the 15th day of Nisan, as I said. And therefore, Here it says that this year, Friday, March 29th, is a fast day for the Jewish firstborn male in commemoration of the 10th plague, the slaying of the firstborn male Egyptians, which immediately resulted in Exodus, so this year will not be. It will not be March 29th, but rather on April the 14th. And the next part will be ritual search for Chametz is conducted, we'll get back to that in a moment. Thursday evening, March 28th, will be April the 13th. And then the Passover Seder is a ritual banquet which reenacts the Exodus, conducted on the first and second evening of Pesach. It will be Friday and Shabbat, April 14th and April 15th, 1995. Okay? At the bottom of the page, under number 10, you have more dates there. The date again is not correct for this year. Instead of Monday, April 1, it will be Monday, April 17th. Thursday, April 20th, and the last days are going to be April 21 and 22. 21 and 22. Okay. Now, how many copies do we need here? About 25, I think. Okay. Can you do it?
No.
Otherwise, I'll go over the staples and get it done.
Okay. All right. I need another volunteer. The Seder plate. Now for that, the whole Seder program.
You
may. You have the old one, huh?
This one.
I have that somewhere here, so. Okay, and then I'll be able to distribute, so if you can make, copies of it, mm-hmm. We'll distribute next week,
yes.
But we have time, we have time. Now, I want to go through some early steps with you. One is, in the Torah it says not once but twice in two different ways, that it is prohibited for a Jew to not only eat chametz, what is chametz?
Leaven.
Chametz. Originally, the basic object of chametz is bread. Is it correct?
No, bread with water also has to be.
It would mean flour, not bread. Flour mixed with water, which stays together without being baked, more than 18 minutes,
okay,
more beyond 18 minutes, begins to ferment.
What if you take matzah and simply let it
bake? It's bread.
Once the flour and water is baked prior to the 18 minutes, and it becomes matzah, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and it's thoroughly baked, then it can never become chametz again.
Mm-hmm.
So you can soak it, and you can eat it, and
make lasagna.
There are many Jews.
Lasagna.
There are many Jews who do not do, Vicky, what you just said. Many religious Jews who do not eat during the entire Pesach holiday, with the exception of the very last day of Pesach.
They don't eat what?
They will not mix even matzah with any liquid.
Really?
Yeah, it's called in German, gebrocht. Gebrocht, you'll see that word. On many packages it says that the farsal, some food, are not made from gebrocht. And it means that even though it was thoroughly baked, and it cannot become chametz, nevertheless it was not mixed with any kind of liquid, because there is a feeling in certain parts of Europe, the rabbis felt, even after the matzah is completely baked, in a very quick process, it takes from the time that the flour is mixed together with water, and they make of it a dough, nothing mixed into it. And the dough is then taken, a piece of the dough is taken, and it is rolled. Anybody ever seen a Balderholz? A rolling pin? You don't even know what they're running. You did go up the way I did. A rolling pin to flatten out. To flatten out this dough, and very flat, it shouldn't be thick at all, and it's then put upon certain rods, and these rods are then injected into, or put into a hot burning oven, baking oven,
the entire process from the mixture of the flour and the water to the finishing of the baking takes no more than 4 to 6 minutes.
They have
18 minutes leeway. 4 to 6 minutes. It's a very quick process. But those rabbis are afraid that because of the quickness of the process, there may be a particle of that matzah, it's called matzah, which was not completely baked, and therefore if you mix it with water, you're starting the whole process of fermentation again. Anybody here who is a chemist? Anybody have any background in chemistry? Okay, then I don't have to get into a hassle with you, because usually there's a chemist in the audience, they say, fermentation? Fermentation is a chemical process. I can test it in the laboratory to see how long it takes for something to begin to ferment and turn into yeast. That's what happens. Flour mixes with water, then a yeast product is going to be produced, and then I can test it. Why are you telling me 18 minutes? And I usually answer that point because the Torah gives us the definition, and the Torah definition is as good as the definition that your professor gave you in the university. And even better, we live by Torah, but we don't live by the laboratory. And that's true in many, many cases. Many, many cases. We live by Torah. The convert called me the other night, doctor, who's the head of medicine of a very prominent hospital until recently, is now going to settle in Israel. He called me and he asked the following question. He has an elderly mother who's 92 years old and who has Alzheimer's. I'm going to read the translation of that. And a few months ago, she contacted pneumonia. And he is a doctor. His brother is an infectious disease expert in his field. And they treated her with an intensive drug therapy against the pneumonia, and she was cured. She's 92 years old. There's nothing. She seems to be pain was growing all the time. But his question to me was, she now has a bad cold since she doesn't move around. They are certain that once again it's going to develop into pneumonia. Maybe it would be proper to leave her alone and not treat her with antibiotics. Whatever happens, happens, which means that she'll die. Maybe that would be an act of compassion. Good question. He's asking whether it applies to his elderly non-Jewish father. He's a convert, so she is not Jewish. No, his elderly mother is Jewish. What he was really asking was a double set of questions. Number one, do you have to do anything to save the life of a person who is obviously that stage? Number two, is the law different for a non-Jewish mother than it is, let's say, for a Jewish mother? It could very well be that Jewish law could say for a Jewish mother you have to do one kind. Non-Jewish mother, I don't need to do. The question was an excellent one because he is a good convert. He's a righteous convert. But he's asking the rabbi, what is the definition? What is the halakhic guideline? Not what I think. What is the rule in case of the rule? And that's the way a Jew has to think. A real Jew must think, what is the Torah time? What is the definition? A chametz, it means that it's waited 18 minutes. Flour and water mixed together and becomes chametz, period. Whether it's fermentation in the tube, in the test tube, in the laboratory or not, that's beside the point. Anybody interested in knowing what I answered them? I'm just giving you an example of how you're supposed to act. You really want to know? You want to see me privately? I told him, treat her with all intensity for a simple reason. That even though it is possible that according to Halakha, a non-Jew called the Ben Noach can be treated differently than a Jewish person. In certain circumstances, it may be true. But a doctor cannot allow himself that privilege. But if you let a patient who is sick die with non-treatment in one bed, then you're liable to do it in the next bed too.
Don't do it. The general practice, halakha calls for you to save the life of the every minute of life is important. You know, the old hope that the cure for Alzheimer's or for cancer is going to come just before the person dies, right? Yeah.
I have a question.
Go safe is the person who is in a coma, who is very close to death, trying to breathe in the last breath, which can last for a long time. Zefa means a person who is physically dead, but is still breathing. There are halachic ramifications of what you're asking, what I'm asking. Halakha would be if you kill that person, the person who judges a sefa, would it be a form of murder for which you could be held responsible and for capital punishment? The law is if a person, the victim, is a sefa, then it is prohibited to kill that person in the life of the person in 1 second. But the Bedin could not inflict, we don't have it today at all, the Bedin could not inflict death punishment on that perpetrator because he or she had killed a person who is no longer viable, no longer alive. But that would have to be judged by a doctor, and one could not just say, hey, that person, that patient is a traitor, let's do what we want. It would be judged by three doctors in consultation with a rabbi. Examination would be made, whether it's a favor, and then, even then, could not. The rule of thumb that we use is that you have to save the life of a person with medication. If medication can do it, do it. Use the medication. Use that medication. Also, with the heroic equipment that is sometimes applied to a person who is sick, ventilator, respirator, and so on. And Rabbi, there's a book called Jewish Medical Ethics. The chief, former chief rabbi of England, British Britain, wrote one of the earlier books, and his rule is still correct. That is, if the heroic equipment, life-saving devices, have not been applied to the patient, then doctors can decide, no necessity, it's not going to help. Patients come out, and we'll see what happens. Some patients pull out, some patients die. Once that life-saving device, heroic equipment, is applied to the patient, it is prohibited to turn off the body. Turn off the switch. What that means ending the life is murder. It's equivalent to murder. And even though the patient may be judged as a tefa, is already physically unable to continue life, but still breathing. Heart is still pumping. Brain is still working. Difficult to say that person is alive. But we have a lot of problems. I think we'll get through one of these ways on brain stem death. But that's not, so the Torah says, not only may you not eat chametz, and a Jew who consumes chametz on Pesach, by eating it, is culpable and could be punishable by what punishment? Kari. Has several meanings, among them being premature death. A Jew who eats a piece of bread on Pesach, and by a piece of bread I mean the size of, let's say, an ounce of bread, would be punished. Could be punished by kari. A Jew is also not permitted to eat any food in which there's a mixture of chametz. Now, what is chametz? What makes a, I've been using the word flour. Flour and water. Flour made of what grain?
The five basic grains.
There are five grains. What are they?
Wheat, rye,
oats, barley. Say rye? Not rye. Rye is
and
not one of those grains. Wheat, dough.
That's it.
Millet. Those are the five. Now, rye is not
you got one more. Depends if you're asking us or it's a body
problem. Because in ancient times, in the Middle Ages as well, rice was a substitute for flour. They would grind the rice down, and they could bake bread out of the rice. So in many communities,
the rabbis passed a legislation that rye, our American corn, maize, goes into the same, kidney yolk, as it's called, legumes, peas, beans.
Sephardic still, though, right?
Sephardic, yeah. So Ashkenazic Jews.
Let's open a can of worms.
Right? Ashkenazic Jews do not eat that on Passover. All Sephardic Jews never had that legislation. Even the Sephardic Oriental community, they did not use rice as a substitute for bread or flour of any kind in their history. So we have the two different customs in Jewish life. Yes, sir.
The
convert has to be consistent. The convert must can decide to be either an Ashkenazic Jew or a Sephardic Jew. I would advise converts in this area of New York not to become Sephardic Jews, because the Sephardic community in this area, Syrian Sephardic, do not accept converts. So any convert who says, I want to be part of this community, already is setting himself or herself up for a slap in the face and frustration. An excommunication. Okay, how do you choose? Well, a husband sometimes becomes a criteria. Mm-hmm. In this neighborhood, when it comes Passover time, the questions that the rabbis ask all the time is, I'm an Ashkenazi woman, and I married a Sephardic man, and we're going to his parents' home for the Seder. And his parents, his mother cooks with rice and peas and all that stuff. Am I permitted to eat it? Asked the young lady. Family, am I permitted? Answer,
no.
Depends on your husband. If your husband is a Sephardic Jew, wife, male chauvinism.
Mm-hmm.
Wife, that's the way to keep peace, by the way. You got to follow one of the two. The opposite is also true. If an Ashkenazic fellow marries a Sephardic girl, and her parents invite them to the Seder, and they're going to prepare all of these foods which are mixed with the food that Ashkenazic Jews don't eat, and that's Ashkenazi guy and his wife have a problem. They have to tell Mama, please prepare food without spice. The man determines, the husband determines. Clothing is a convert who's not married. What tradition should that convert make? They have the freedom of choice in a sense, although the criterion usually is that the rabbi who is accepted by that person as his or her rabbi should be the one to serve as a role model. Yes.
Question. I'm just a little confused.
Only a little.
No, just a question. About the situation you just
Japan.
About the situation you just explained, that the husband is Sephardic and the wife is Ashkenaz, and he's going over to her family's house. At that point, when they prepare all those different types of food for him, what happens to the plates and everything that they eat in?
Good question. And the answer is that the plates, the pots, and the pans do not become chametz.
Okay.
Because you're not dealing with real chametz. You're dealing with a legislation.
Okay.
Therefore, although any good rabbi will tell the mother-in-law, get yourself some extra pots and pans and prepare the food. Otherwise, it's preventing them with a problem that they don't deserve, they don't need. And their cooperation is the way to success in France. Okay. So that's a mixture. Mixtures of chametz means that there is something of chametz in the food. It's not pure bread. It's not pure cake made out of chametz, but it's got chametz in it. Ice cream has malt in it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see the malt. Possibly don't taste it, but it's there. Candy, soda, you name it. Any kind of food today which is processed can have chametz, or it could be made in vats, in utensils, in belt systems that have been used the whole year for chametz. So everything that's prepared for Pesach has to have a hechsher. What's a hechsher?
It could be a signature.
Pastoral supervision by a reliable either organization and or rabbi. And
There are, you have the list I gave out to you about the symbol, the OU, if you have to see it, it is marked kosher for Passover. And it's not just a sticker that somebody put on a can or somebody put on a box. Usually it's not. That's part of the legend of the reading material on that container showing that it was produced for Passover, which means months in advance, not now. Begin to produce all the food for Pesach 6 months in advance in special factories that are kosher, or special factories that are set aside only for the preparation of kosher for Pesach items. And anything that has a mixture in it is also prohibited to be eaten by a Jew on Pesach.
I know this is a
tradition,
but may I
tell you? Please.
I love
it.
That was good.
Record this one.
We'll record this one.
Well, the class I'm involved with, the Orthodox Church, and I have children from the Greek marriage when they're little. And we were beginning to look at the house for Pesach, which is everything with children takes much more effort. So my girlfriend, Susan Service, who came and was helping me with sections and what you have to do here and what you have to do there so that we could prepare. My children were trying to take this all in, and it was a difficult concept. So we went through the entire pantry, and she was explaining which section, which thing, the laborious process for an hour and a half, and I was thoroughly exhausted. And my little one comes in, and we were putting everything back, and she says, "Oh, Mommy, you can put that waffle maker back in the pantry." And I said, "Oh, okay, honey, why?" Why is it kosher? You know, you know, laboratory or school thing has a hex
code. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you. And, of course, all items. Every item has to be checked very thoroughly to see that it's a proper. And if one does not know, then one should ask the local Orthodox rabbi what is the rule on that particular item. Now, rabbis get hold today of many lists of kosher products, including not only food, but medication. For instance, I have a book here, which is called, you can get it, by the way, it's no secret, for $5.50 you can buy it in any Jewish bookstore, which is The Laws of Pesach, a Digest, by Rabbi Blumenkrantz. Rabbi Blumenkrantz, some of you know, Rabbi Blumenkrantz, does a very excellent job. And in it you'll find not only the laws of Pesach, but a great deal of material about what can be wrong with wine, and what can be wrong with different foods, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do before Pesach and during Pesach. But you have also a whole list of different items that may or may not be kosher for Pesach. I'll just run down some of the major headings for it. I'll go into fish, glucose, grapefruit juice, I mean, you're just heading, different teas, honey, Ipecac syrup, juices, derivatives of those kidney yogurts. For instance, one of the big problems we have in this country is cornstarch, or corn syrup, used as a sweetener in almost everything, and it's a derivative of maize of the corn. That makes it like rice. And the Barton's candy, which is under the OU, approved for Pesach, if it's prepared for Pesach, once ran into a major problem 3 weeks before Pesach. All the candies were made of the corn syrup. All of them. That was the sweetener. And one of the great rabbis in New York announced that corn syrup is off out of bounds. No good for Pesach. Millions and millions of dollars worth of chocolates. Suddenly, not kosher. Millions. It lost a fortune. Almost went off the stock market. Or Coca-Cola. Look on your Coca-Cola bottle. The whole year, you'll see that corn syrup is one of the major ingredients in the sweetener. I'm not talking about the diet. Corn syrup. But when the kosher for Passover, Coca-Cola, and there is such a thing, it says no point. Sweetener is either sugar or ascertain what is it, saccharin, whatever it is, but it's not going to be the corn syrup. Marshmallow, lemon, wine, as I said. Mm-hmm. I'll give you only headings. I'm not saying what's kosher and what's not kosher.
Oh, that's
I'm telling you that there are problems. Air freshener, alcohol, aluminum pan, aspirin, baby oil, baby ointment, talcum powder, motor oil. Motor oil,
yeah.
Don't talk to me about motor oil. I got the light went on in my car yesterday. It was a short 1 quart of oil, and I didn't want to go, but the light went on. Go to the third station right away, and I'll get some deals cash. $8.50 it cost me for 1 quart. Cosmetics and perfume, and then you have the whole list of medicine companies, which are very, very important because people want to take medication. In many cases, the medication is permitted to be taken because it's life-threatening not to take medication. On the other hand, if there is a substance which is non-chametz, then it should be used. And then hold it. Okay? So you can get this. Yes. You'll read it here if you want. They say the finishing process of aluminum pan, give it the gleam, give it that shine. They finish it off sometimes with fats. A certain layer of fat. That fat may be not only not kosher, but not kosher, period.
No problem.
And therefore, like that. Now, so another law about Pesach is a Jew is not permitted to own any chametz on Pesach. Not only not to eat it, not to use it, but to own it on Pesach would be prohibited. So what do we do?
Sell it.
What do we do?
We sell it.
What I brought to show you is a typical, what's called a shtar mishira, a shtar hasha'a, to be more exact, which is a power of attorney. Anybody who's a lawyer? What's a lawyer's office? Power of attorney. This document says that the following people have signed their name on here or another sheet are giving the power of attorney authorization to a rabbi to sell all of their chametz before Pesach to any non-Jew that he wishes to do so. And that authorization is very important because in the rabbi can sell all of the chametz which is going to remain, because otherwise the chametz becomes prohibited for any use whatsoever. Chametz ideally should be destroyed before Pesach, but we can't imagine that Walmart, which is one owned by a Jewish lady, should destroy $5 million worth of cereal. Right? Warehouse, all chametz. She went to a rabbi, Lawrence, Queen, 5 pounds, and she asked the rabbi to act as her agent and to sell all of the chametz to a non-Jew, and therefore the product, the chametz product, named in the Walmart store, did not become prohibited after Pesach. During Pesach, of course, they are prohibited from chametz, even if it belongs to a non-Jew, not after the eating. This is the typical document that was used by the rabbi to get the authorization. Okay? On the night before Pesach, this year on the 14th, on Thursday night, what's the date on that? April
13th,
I believe?
14th is April. 13th is the 13th.
Friday? 13th. Okay. We go through a ceremony which is called the Dikat Chametz, the search for chametz. We want to be sure that no chametz is in the house, by that time the house should be completely clean. It's only 24 hours before the Pesach. And the search is done traditionally for 3 items. And the feather. The chicken. Not used for pigment purposes. Used as a brush. And a candle. Before we begin to search for the chametz, several things are done traditionally. They'll spread out with the candle in the end.
Right. We're spread out some 10 pieces of chametz throughout the house, although the search has to be an authentic one, to look everywhere, in all the closets, in all the drawers, under the bed, in the car, in the trunk of the car, under the seat of the car, or the carrying cases, and so on, because anywhere where chametz could have been placed or used during the year, the search has to go on. It's obvious in our home to use a burning candle and be a source of danger. So therefore, the Lord is very accommodating, it says, to his righteous, I start the search to make the prophet. Here I have a card that's called my prophet to make, a statement to make. It's called that he was the Bikat Hamed, the search for Hamed. And by the start of the part of the house, where there are no carpets, no rugs, nothing inflammable, and I begin with the burning candle. I go around, and if I find any comics, I will use the feathers like a brush. If you don't have feathers, you can use a toothbrush. Anyway, yeah. And you take the comics and you sweep them into the spoon, and you take the comics into the bag, and you accumulate all the comics that you found. Not only those 10 pieces, whatever comics. Now, usually I find a lot of candy in my pocket, or through my shoe pocket, and candy, you know. Chocolate. Very important. The next morning, Friday morning, all the chametz that has been gathered together are going to be burned. We are permitted to eat chametz this year because it's going to be daylight saving time. The day is going to be long. Move the clock ahead in April. So we are permitted to eat chametz until about 10 a.m. in the morning. Day before Pesach, called Erev Pesach. We burn the chametz an hour later, about 11, and the Jewish community will find synagogue in the backyard or somewhere, or Jewish home, where there's a tent, and there's a fire in the air, and they burn the chametz. And then a special formula that has to be recited, saying that any chametz that remains, I want to own it, I don't want to be responsible for it, it's not mine, it's like the dust on the earth, and that's the way the religious Jew, at that point, just divorces himself or herself from Chametz. I remember when I was young, I was 10, 11 years old, at a test, 3 or 4 times. I was in the Eastern Rock, and I walked around to the different things from my mother. And in that verse, we walked by a candy store. I was hungry, I had eaten everything. So, no problem. Those days, I eat the candy for 5 cents. And then, I had 5 cents. And I walked over and bought a piece of candy. Out of my mouth, about to bite down, I'm telling you the story because that's next time. Then he becomes a very strict guy. If he makes mistakes, any question about what I'm saying? By the way, spiritually, great rabbis have said that the search for the chametz is symbolic of the search for evil that every person has to do. Himself or herself. Chametz, or what they like to call the or should be inside, the yeast, the dough, compared to the evil inclination, yitzhahara, in the person. Just as we are obligated to get rid of the physical chametz, we are obligated before Passover to get rid of the spiritual chametz, spiritual evil, of jealousy, of anger, of vindictiveness, hatefulness, thievery, lying, conceit. These are the manifestations of evil that people have. They're actually all righteous. I'm a tzaddikim, right? They're all righteous people. I'm not talking about myself. And that's an ideal thing to do. Search out the chametz in the human being, not in the other human being, but in oneself. We are very accustomed to life. Always finding bad things that the other guy is doing. You very seldom look in the real mirror and say, I'm doing something that should be rectified. See? But that's what you're supposed to do. Any question about that? Then comes the night of Pesach, and we'll continue with this next time. Please, God, I'd like you to read all of this in whatever text you have. You have a whole suggested reading list. Donin has a great deal on this. Lamb has a great deal. And Wolf in his book has a great deal. Ali Kaplan, in those wonderful books also about Pesach. Pesach is a very important time. Do you have a Pesach that can put that in there?
Yeah, it's in that box. No, there was two on the table. I just took a peek and grabbed one.
He and I share. Well, let me hold off a little bit. I'll try to get to you. But you can get them yourself. If you call the OU, you know, I don't want to be a thief.
Me neither. Here you go. Take it back.
They're available.
Yeah, take this one back, please. I could go see now.
They come in a little later, so they're all the books that are put out by the Cup K, by the OK, all the Hampshire organizations, which provide an organization, major ones, prepared books of this nature. The Pesach holiday begins a period called the Omer period. Now, how many days is Pesach?
Eight.
In Israel, it's seven. Outside of Israel, we have a problem of celebrating 2 days. In Israel, they celebrate 1 day, with the exception of one holiday in which we both, outside and inside Israel, celebrate the 2 days, which is Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah.
What did he say? Rosh Hashanah. I don't know what he's a
Pesach.
No, no,
no.
These guys are crazy. They're so funny.
From Ashkenazim, the night after Pesach finishes Ashkenazim, you have to go out to buy pizza.
Yep. Everybody's going to
come in quickly as possible. You have to go out there and wait for the first pizza to be baked. But it also begins in a village called the Omer, which the second day of Passover, the second night to be more accurate, is going to begin to count 49 days, 74 weeks. 50 days will be
Shavuot.
What does it symbolize? And we'll get into more detail next week. It symbolizes 2 things. One fortnight here. Exodus, liberation, freedom, purpose. Shavuot is time we receive the Torah. The Torah is full of restrictions. Don't do this, don't do that. Do this, do that, do the don't. 248 do's, 365 don't. Make the grand total out. 6 verses. And the rabbi died for 7 positives to that, so 6 questions, right? It's a very big Torah. A lot of restrictions. A lot of discipline. A lot of self-control. That's the code. Liberty without self-discipline, freedom without self-control, makes for havoc, makes for devastation and destruction. If one is free to do whatever he or she wants, there's nobody to stop them. Nobody says, I've come, no further. then it produces what we are seeing in society today. Murder, mayhem, shooting, poison gas, everything. No difference. The Torah taught us very, very strictly freedom from Egypt. Yes, we are free people. You are not free to do what you want. You must be enslaved to God. So the two are connected. Pesach is connected with Shavuot. We begin to count. The number, we make it one unit. We add it all up. It becomes one end. Yeah. Very important. You can put out important to the modern copy. You see another generation. Uncontrolled activity produces a drug society, an alcoholic society, murderous society, no moral ethics, no family life. The traditional values are breaking down because we have no guidelines. The Torah gave guidelines to the Jewish people. And those who want to be good Jews have to follow those guidelines, as difficult as they may be. Any questions? Okay. See you all. Please get.
Someone's father passed away. They complained he cannot do it, he cannot do it, he cannot do it, he cannot do it. And he asked somebody, and he said that he can form it, and he said, I know that the idea
is for it. The ideal thing is for son, say, hobby, not like you, the daughter, the child, because hobby is for a parent. In the event one cannot, physically cannot do so, impossible, then one can appoint an agent, pay a person to say the Kaddish for him. Most rabbis would say that the mourner, the son, should say Kaddish whenever he possibly can. Just not give it up and say, well, I paid the guy $200-$300, so I'm free for the entire year. No. Get into that shul whenever he possibly can, and teach himself. It becomes physically impossible. Economically impossible, somebody else to come to you to tell you a Reformed joke and then you go home, Reformed Jewish joke. The guy came to the rabbi, he's a Reformed rabbi, and he said, Rabbi, my father died, and I have to sit shiva for 7 days, and I have no time. I'm busy. My business doesn't allow it. So would you please sit shiva for me? Well, what don't rabbis do for their congregants? The rabbi sat shiva for half the congregation. This time he was very nice, he came to visit the rabbi, experience. See you all next Tuesday, please God.